Hey, Hawkeye fans, Chad Lystico, Kennington Smith with our usual Tuesday YouTube podcast. No game week this week, Kennington Smith, as we don't have a Big Ten championship game to cover this Saturday after the Hawkeyes 24-17 loss to Nebraska. Did I introduce myself? Chad Lystico, Des Moines Register, Kennington Smith, Des Moines Register. That's early. Got my coffee nearby here. Kennington, how are you feeling this morning? We're not used to doing it this early. You feeling energized or a little bit lethargic? I'm going to say I feel a little bit lethargic kind of after this regular season.
Yeah, I guess a little bit on the lethargic side. I actually was not feeling well yesterday. I went to basketball availability and luckily got that story out. But on my drive home, like I just knew. I was like, man, this is going to be a rough night. So had like a little, it's like a 24-hour bug or whatever it was. But I woke up feeling fine. So glad to be here. Glad I woke up in pretty good health. But still, I don't know, got a little like dust in my eyes or whatever. The people who are listening to this audio couldn't see what I just did to my eyes. But now I'm feeling good. And, you know, we got men's basketball tonight, the ACC Big Ten Challenge. So looking forward to going out to Carver for that. No, we're focused on football this morning, and I'm ready to get into it.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's fire ourselves up. I'm sorry to hear you're sick. Yeah, my kids have been dealing with a couple little things, too, so I think it's that time of year. Let's just look back. This will be kind of our three-down format. We got three topics for you. Yes, we're going to get into Cade McNamara and the Big Ten West later in the show, but let's first look back in our first down topic. At Nebraska one more time, because I gave the DVR Monday treatment to the game. I didn't really feel like doing it again. It feels like there's been so many of those games this year, Kennington, where it's like, do I really have to watch this and go through like all the offensive line misses and the bad throws and whatnot? But it was a good exercise, and I thought what I came out of it, it was interesting in the postgame, right? Kirk Ferentz said, I didn't think the offensive line played that bad from his seat. And I would say that – it was kind of in the middle. Like, if you look at the big sacks, they were like off corner blitzes, where I think Ferentz is right that's not on the offensive line. That's either on Caleb Johnson or the quarterback to identify and get out of. But that said, there was a lot of pressures, especially late in that game. You know, even on the 90-yard touchdown drive, Kennington, where there was a three-man rush and somebody got home almost immediately. Now that there's going to be mistakes over the course of 72 snaps, yes, but you know, that was the type of stuff that just didn't used to happen with Iowa's offensive line. So to me, I thought in just kind of reviewing the Nebraska game, looking back through it, combing over the film, I kind of liked the game plan. Which I know people are kind of crazy about or going crazy about that, but Petrus was missing like basic throws. Like there was the second series of the game overthrows Reggiani on the first play. Like it would have been a 14-yard gain by my estimate. Then you get chunk runs of 11 and 10 to LeSean Williams. It's a 0-0 game at this point. And then, so you kind of recover from that Nico miss, and then you overthrow Luke Lachey, like blatantly overthrow him wide open, you know, to start second and 10 again. So it was quarterback execution, it was offensive line execution, and obviously the injury to Jajean. But all in all, it was just a reminder how many offensive issues there are to fix this offseason.
Yeah, and you know, moving off of that point about Spencer missing the throws, and then we got a chance to see Alex Padilla for, you know, nearly three quarters. And the offense wasn't effective under him except for, you know, kind of that late drive at the end. And I know Caleb popped a long run in the third quarter as well. But I think it just kind of reinforces how much help Iowa's going to need to bring in to push the offense forward next year. You started the quarterback. That was one of the biggest question marks of the year. Was Spencer Petras going to be able to take that step forward? We've seen the results from a 12-game season. Then the question after that would be, given a fair chance, would Alex Padilla fare much better? I think coming out of this Nebraska game, I think that most people are under the opinion that he is not the quarterback that is going to push Iowa's offense forward either. So now the question is, do you go outside to seek some outside reinforcements, or is the answer potentially Joe Labus, or is it Carson May, or, you know, Marco Linus seems a little unlikely because he's not enrolling into the summer, but that's kind of where I'm at on that offensive line. I think it's really, if you're a fan, it has to be a little disheartening that in the last game of the season, problems that you saw in week 1, 2, 3 still appear to be problems in week 12. And in regards to the offensive line, when you say that, you know, there was three guys beating five and Alex Padilla seemed to be under a lot of pressure, and unfortunately for Spencer that he got hurt, but fortunately for Iowa's offense and Alex, he had the legs to escape some of those pressures, because with the non-mobile quarterback, there would have been a lot more sacks than there were as the game progressed. You just see, you know, guys just kind of losing one-on-one matchups. And that's, you know, just something that you don't want to see in week 12. So there were some bright spots. I mean, the run game looked good, and the times that they were able to run the ball. But once they started turning the ball over and got into a large deficit, I mean, they had to throw the ball to try to get back into the game. And, you know, it's, again, it just kind of, you know, reinforces that a lot of the problems throughout the season is kind of what did Iowa in this last game and kind of prevented them from going to the Big Ten championship. And a lot of those things kind of were masked during that 4-game winning streak because they were doing the things that they needed to do to execute and to win the game. But, you know, a lot of red flags kind of reared their ugly head in the final game. And I think it, you know, just kind of accelerated, obviously it accelerated their offseason, but it kind of brings back into focus the core problems of the offense and the big overarching question, which is what is Iowa's coaching staff, namely Kirk Ferentz, going to do to rectify that for the 2023 season?
Yeah, and just kind of – it was a tough game. We don't like to – we're not in the business of calling college kids out and criticizing their performance or anything like that. So this isn't a you know, not criticizing the player individually, but it was just a – Iowa really threw Logan Jones out there all season long at center. And that's a really tough spot for him. I mean, he had no help. There was never another guy that they threw in there at center to give him a break, you know, to you know, give him a week off to figure things out. Iowa just didn't have that luxury. I mean, I think they thought maybe Mike Mislinski or Tyler Ellsbury might be an option there at center post Tyler Linderbaum, but it was kind of clear that Iowa was going to kind of let Logan go, you know, work out the growing pains and whatnot. But that was a tough situation in a lot of games this year, and this was definitely one of them where, you know, he did not have, you know, I'm sure he would say he didn't have his best game pass blocking. It was clear on video he didn't. I think center and right tackle ended up being kind of the big sore spots this year, especially once Connor Colby moved inside and seemed to solidify left guard. I mean, Mason Richmond, I thought, played, you know, other than one sack or one pressure that those two gave up on a 3-man rush, I thought that they had an okay game. But center and right tackle, that's probably something that has to be fixed this offseason. You would think with the development piece now, Logan Jones would be able to take that next step. And then, of course, the right tackle piece will have a better idea by December 21st if that is solidified with the program. I didn't want to take too much time on Nebraska because I know people don't want to relive that, but I felt like, again, it was Kennington, the offensive line just never progressed as much as it needed to weeks 1 through 12. And then, yeah, I think we did get our answers at quarterback that, you know, these two players are not the answer in 2023, and that will lead us into our next topic. But I think that it was probably a good thing, right? That not that we wish any injury, obviously, but kind of got to see Alex Padilla in a mostly. I mean, it was 10-0 when he came in. He had, right, or 7-0 maybe.
Yeah,
it was 10-0. 10-0. You know, there's plenty of time. They were running the ball constantly. They didn't have a lot of pressure. They didn't put the game on his shoulders for a while, and so we at least got to see what it looked like against not a great defense. And that was the other part of this with Nebraska. So,
yeah.
So I think we got some answers there.
Yeah.
They were unfortunate how it came about. at least got some answers for 2023, and that'll lead us to our next topic. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say on that Alex point, you know, I've said this before, my biggest gripe with him playing these last two games before this one was that he came in the second half. They were in possible deficits against two teams that were vying for national championships. I feel like that is not a great litmus test for how good a quarterback is. So this provided a little bit more of, you know, some middle ground so we can kind of see how he would react in this type of situation. And, you know, it'd be interesting to see what Alex does as well kind of in the next, you know, coming days and weeks.
Sorry, getting work messages during this, trying to reply to those two. No worries. All right, let's move on. Topic two. This is the one I think people want to hear about. What would a Cade McNamara, you know, Iowa quarterback Cade McNamara look like? Obviously, that is a – not obviously, but there is some buzz, especially when somebody like Bruce Feldman tweets that out there, that Iowa is a team to watch. The Michigan quarterback who lost his job to J.J. McCarthy is sidelined for the season with knee surgery now. So he's not playing. He's going to enter, or he has entered the portal as a grad transfer. Probably a lot of people already know that, but Iowa is in the mix. And so that is, I think, a positive. Just your initial thoughts, Kennington, as you know, connect the dots, what type of player he is. I wrote a piece on this that should be up at Hawk Central by the time we finish this podcast about that potential fit in Iowa City. I think it would be – well, give me your thoughts first, and I'll kind of go into some of the things I wrote about.
Yeah, I think it would be a great fit on all fronts. I mean, he checks a lot of boxes. He is obviously physically talented. He was a four-star recruit, and he started at Michigan. When we talk about the complexity of Iowa's offense, let's say that Iowa does not change anything schematically on offense, and you think about the comments of how long it takes to learn the system, this is somebody who played under Jim Harbaugh and is a graduate transfer. He's an older guy. I think that there wouldn't be a lot of concern about him coming in and picking up the offense. When you think about what he brings from an on-the-field standpoint, he doesn't turn the ball over very often. He's able to use his legs in some capacity. And I think that another thing to consider is his name and the potential for other players who enter the portal to want to come and play with somebody who just led an undefeated season last year and won a Big Ten championship and played in the college football playoffs. So I think that it makes sense from a lot of those aspects. And I think from Iowa's perspective, even if you were only to get him for, let's say, just a year, that would give you a year to potentially have a Joe Labus as the backup quarterback to get a higher responsibility on the team. You'll be able to have Carson May, Marco Linus get another year for Carson May, the first year for Marco Linus, and after McNamara would graduate the year after the 23 season, you might feel better about, you know, the future of your quarterback room with Labus having, I think that would be his third year in the program. And then you would have some younger guys with, you know, some time in the program as well. And you could have, you know, some young quarterbacks battling it out that following spring for the starting job. So I think it makes sense from a lot of fronts. And I think that, you know, Iowa should do whatever it takes to try to, you know, to bring him into the fold, because I do think that when you talk about somebody who could be an answer for at least a year and elevate Iowa's offensive profile and give them a chance to compete for Big Ten West title next year, you're going to be, I believe, hard pressed to find somebody more qualified to do that than McNamara. You're on mute.
This mute button is very finicky because I pushed it and it must have gone twice. I'm sure he'll have a lot of suitors as well, but it does seem like Iowa is at least in on him early and has a chance here. So I've seen Notre Dame even thrown out there because he initially committed to Notre Dame. That should tell you a little bit about his recruiting profile. I mean, this is a highly recruited four-star kid. Iowa was never in the mix for him a while back. And, he would have 2 years available, too. And, I mean, coming off a serious knee injury, Kennington, I would think that might – I mean, obviously, you know, Cade McNamara isn't doing interviews with us currently, but, you know, I would think that would be a possibility. That could be a two-year deal, too, because, you know, potentially. But, obviously, yeah, even 1 year, like you said, would help. 63% career passer at Michigan. This is a guy that has started a college football playoff game. This is a guy that beat Iowa in the Big Ten championship game a year ago with a decent line, 16 to 24, 169 yards. His numbers are not like out of this world. He's not, especially coming off a knee surgery, not super mobile, but not like immobile either. So maybe, you know, I don't know. Maybe put him in the Padilla classification type of guy that can move a little bit and avoid sacks. He didn't get sacked too much at Michigan. So, but I think the cachet, yeah. Like, could he, if Iowa can do this early, can that help solidify this current recruiting class? Can that, like you said, bring in other guys in the portal? Because I think that's what they need. You know, some kind of splash move. And we're going to get into other splash moves later in this podcast around surrounding Iowa. But obviously, that this seems like about as good as Iowa could do, right? I mean, I can't imagine, unless they're going to pay big time money to somebody in the NIL sphere. And I don't even know who that would be that would want to come to Iowa, given the offensive struggles. I don't know. I'm kind of rambling here. But at the same time, if you're McNamara, you know, you could be seen as the next, you know, the final piece to the puzzle for a team that's already got a good defense and good special teams. You don't have to do everything when you get in there.
Yeah. And I think that another thing to consider with McNamara is I'm sure there will be people who, I don't want to say that would be detractors to McNamara coming to Iowa, but they will probably temper these expectations by saying, oh, well, he played with Michigan, who has all of this elite talent, and Iowa doesn't have this elite talent. It would be unrealistic to expect him to like carry the offense. I don't think he necessarily has to do that either. I mean, he played on a Michigan team that I know they look explosive this year with these wide receiver weapons, but they really weren't that the last year when they went to the college football playoff. They are very much reliant on the run game. And if you're looking at Iowa's offense, really the only promising thing besides Luke Lachey for next year is the fact that they have Caleb Johnson and LeSean Williams, and they were able to run the ball against Nebraska in spurts, and you feel good about the development that each of those two will take next year, in addition to Jazzy and Patterson, who the program likes a lot. And you know, we'll see what happens with Gavin as well, but he's somebody who's played a lot of games also. So you have a good core group of running backs. You have to feel like the offensive line would take a step forward. I don't know how much of a step forward it is, but you have to feel like Richmond, Colby, Jones at least will get better. Same with Bo Stevens and Dunker, that there's a potential that the offensive line will look a little bit better next year. As far as the weapons, pass catcher-wise, obviously that's like a huge concern. And we'll see what Iowa does to rectify that in the next you know, weeks and months or so. But I don't think it's a situation where McNamara necessarily has to come in and start throwing the ball 30, 35 times a game and passing for over 300 yards and kind of carrying the offense. I think that if you can take the steps forward in the run game and you are able to surround him with a solid run game and a good defense and good special teams, that he can come in and do, you know, a really good job. And you can go on Twitter and look in terms of his statistical profile and how it ranks against, you know, some of the more appreciated, I think that would be the good word, appreciated Iowa quarterbacks the last few years, the Breathards, the Stanleys, Ricky Stanzi, and he is above those guys. So this is somebody who is clearly an upgrade. And I think, you know, my last point here as far as Iowa, it was a really good thing that he decided to enter into the portal now instead of, let's say, waiting it out until Michigan season was actually done. And I know he's not playing and he's not like physically with the team, but that makes a significant difference when you have a team that is likely going into the playoffs and might play into January and you enter into the portal then versus doing it now where, you know, Iowa can really be able to kind of like work on that and kind of kick the tires early. So I think that that's working in their favor as well.
Is Josh Gattis going to get fired at Miami OC?
I don't know, but that's, I mean, it's,
I'm just
it's,
throwing, I'm just throwing a bit viable,
of, I mean, it's definitely
speculative scenario out there. Could Iowa bring in Josh Gattis and Cade McNamara as a package, reunite them?
That's definitely something that could be in play. That's interesting because you typically don't think about coordinators of his cachet getting fired after their first year, but Miami's season was that bad. So I wouldn't be surprised if they moved off of him, and that, you know, that's something that could be interesting as well. I haven't really thought about that.
Yeah, I'm just something. I'm not I have no info on that. I'm just, you know, this is the time of year we can talk about these things and have fun with them. Does it bother you that if Iowa could land McNamara, which would be, you know, again, I think a really positive step for the 2023 season. We don't know how serious the knee injury is, but based on the picture that he tweeted out, I mean, he had surgery like a couple weeks ago and said it was a serious knee operation. So you would think, even if it's just an ACL, he would miss spring ball. Do you think that that would be how big of a factor do you think that would be in terms of the excitement level for bringing him in?
I think it would affect it to a degree, obviously, just because you're not getting a chance to like see him, and chemistry, timing, those are things that are really big in Iowa's offense that's currently constructed. So I feel like you would have to have some concern there. And I think that going back to another quarterback last year who I thought Iowa should have pursued, JT Daniels, the fact that he couldn't participate in spring practice really hurt his recruitment with a lot of schools. Because, you know, if you're trying to win something, you would like to have a quarterback that you want in the mix, like participating in spring practice. So I think that would be a slight deterrent. But I think you should still go after him. I mean, I don't know if there's going to be a higher profile quarterback entering to the portal. Maybe there is, you know, the Drake Mays and the Tyler Van Dykes or whatever. But right now, this is, you know, the premier option at quarterback. I think Iowa should do their due diligence to try to bring him into the fold. And as far as knee injuries go, they're not the same player, but Michael Penix had several knee injuries at Indiana, and he is killing at Washington right now and reunited with his old offensive coordinator out there as well and having a really good season. So if you're having pause about McNamara's knee injury, at least that is another parallel in the Big Ten that you could point to, a quarterback who had a change of scenery and is doing well in a new location.
Yeah, and again, I'm done. This is just how we're having fun here. But right. But Josh Gattis is kind of a run-oriented OC, and that would be – I would think that would be something that would be appealing to Kirk Ferentz with his style. And, again, I don't even – I probably shouldn't even mention that because I don't want people to connect those dots like and think, oh, it's happening, because I don't – I'm just saying, like, that's the type of splash move I think that you want to see, though. Like,
right.
If you're an Iowa fan or, you know, Iowa administrator, you know, Iowa AD, Iowa coach, you know, that there could be some – you know, there is opportunities out there. There are names out there you can maybe go get to really upgrade this offense in the offseason. We'll find out more in the coming days and weeks and months. And I guess let's move on to third down now, Kennington, and the topic of Matt Rhule being hired at Nebraska and Luke Fickell at Wisconsin. How about that move? Did Wisconsin know that it was going to have a good shot at Fickell, and that's why they pushed Crist out when they did, you know, because it was such a perplexing move at the time? You have to think that there had to have been some feelers at least out there at that point. Or maybe they just thought Jim Leonard was the guy, and then all of a sudden Luke Fickell came about. But I guess I feel like this is like accentuates the desire for change around Iowa City, you know, fans around Iowa City, because, hey, look, Nebraska hired a pretty good coach. We think it's probably a pretty good coach. And then same with Wisconsin. I mean, I was getting surrounded here by young up and coming coaches, and it's Iowa. Let's see what Iowa does to counter.
Yeah, I think I feel like this segment we are going to be very complimentary of the hires that Nebraska and Wisconsin both made. So I want to start off this statement by saying this. Whatever we say from here on out does not mean that Matt Rhule is Tom Osborne and Luke Fickell is going to be Barry Alvarez or Brent Bielema, but these were very good hires by these programs. And historically, even under Scott Frost, though Iowa has beaten them, those games have been close. For all the dysfunction in Nebraska's program over the last several years, those games with Iowa have been close. And with Wisconsin, obviously, they have been a thorn in Iowa's side. So if you think about it from that lens, those programs getting seemingly an upgrade at coach would make them a lot more viable and will make it more difficult for Iowa's program to continuously beat Nebraska and contend with Wisconsin as currently constructed. I think that is where I'm at with it. Looking at Wisconsin, that was a huge hire. And when they fired Paul Chryst, I think that the general reaction was, who else are you going to get that could win at that clip and, you know, kind of continue, you know, what Wisconsin has been? Because under Chryst, they have been, you know, a consistent team. They were winning 9 games, 8 games. And it's kind of like, okay, you look at his record, what is Wisconsin trying to, what message are they trying to send here? And by going out and getting Luke Fickell, who has Big Ten roots and just took a team to the playoffs last year and is known as a very good recruiter, he has the Ohio ties, for him to go to a program like Wisconsin and get back into that Big Ten footprint, and with that name and brand behind his back, will probably be able to recruit a lot more competitively in the state of Ohio and surrounding areas than he was in Cincinnati, and he was recruiting well there anyway. That is something that is scary to an Iowa fan or any other fan, you know, kind of on the west side of the division. Matt Rhule, you know, obviously didn't work out in the NFL, but he is known as a program resurrector. And, you know, same thing with a much larger recruiting footprint in Nebraska than what he had at Baylor and Temple. You figure he'll be able to kind of get some more athletes into that building, and he's a great talent developer as well. It definitely lights a fire up under Iowa, I think. It's going to make the Big Ten West harder next year, but once it goes away from divisions and you have those two kind of building those programs up, obviously it's going to put Iowa into a bit of a pinch if they're not making changes as well. So I'll let you have the floor to have a few more thoughts, but that's just kind of my initial reaction.
Yeah, great stuff. Yeah, I think, you know, I think when you go back and look at like the Scott Frost hire, I think a lot of us thought that was a great hire too by Nebraska. It didn't work out, but I don't know, something a little bit different about Matt Rhule, just the proven commodity, especially what he did at Baylor. Really impressive there. You know, you can't really fault him for that Carolina Panthers thing. I mean, he didn't have a quarterback, and that was kind of they didn't put anything around him. Christian McCaffrey got hurt. Don't want to get into the NFL. But here's my point on Iowa and the Wisconsin-Nebraska stuff. All these teams are positioning for the future college football playoff. Like, mm-hmm. I know that – so let's imagine in 2 years, which is going to happen, USC, UCLA are in the mix. You don't have to be in the Big Ten championship game to make the college football playoff. You just have to be in about the top four, right? Approximately. Yeah. You know, let's say 3 or 4 Big Ten teams every year are going to make the college football playoff. Probably would expect that in the SEC too, right? About four yeah. each out of 16. So you just have to be in that top four. So to me, that's what Wisconsin and Nebraska are positioning themselves for. And that's what Iowa needs to kind of eye in the future. I think Iowa has the cachet, the fan interest, the support to be, in that conversation. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing against, you know, what Ferentz has done here the last 7-8 years in particular. But Iowa is going to have to make some moves to be able to be competitive in that, because we've seen the last 2 years. I mean, this was not a team that could even be viable in a top 12 game with the offense that it has. So, but it is viable defensively. So again, it all comes back to the same thing, is what changes are you willing to make yourself competitive as the college football playoff probably goes to 12 teams in 2024. That's what it's looking like. Right. So,
yeah.
Just one more year of divisions, don't think about this as a Big Ten West thing too much. I mean, next year, certainly, but you got to think long term in terms of these changes. You know, can you be a top 12 national team, essentially? And that's kind of where I'm at on this stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the frustrating part for Iowa fans, that if Iowa just had a top 75 offense, which would still be below average, but a top 75 offense with the same defensive and special teams profile, Iowa would have been playing for New Year's Six Bowls the last probably like three, four years. They would have been in contention for, a top 15 ranking and potentially one of those spots. So I think that's kind of the part that, you know, if I was a fan, that would frustrate me the most, is it is not a talent issue. They have the athletes. It is more of a scheme thing, especially on the offensive side, that is kind of holding them back. And obviously development in the offensive line, they've had injuries at a few other positions, receiver attrition. We get all of that. That's kind of held them back as well. But just kind of overarching, this is a program that, you know, over the last few years has had good enough players to make the Big Ten championship game. So they are kind of there. Just takes a little bit more to kind of get them over that hump. So it'll be really interesting to see what they do from, you know, a change standpoint. But I think also when you're talking about positioning yourself for the future, I look at Nebraska and Wisconsin as two programs that are going to be very aggressive in how they spend and how much more additional resources they put into their program to contend. Obviously, looking at Nebraska, that is a program that you look at and they have the big boosters and they're not willing to, they're not opposed to spending money or doing whatever it takes to win. And I think Matt Rhule being kind of who he is as a program builder, to be able to have those resources that he wasn't, that he didn't have at Baylor and Temple with kind of his temperament and his work ethic, I think on the surface is a really good fit. And in terms of Luke Fickell, when you talk about kicking the, we talk about kicking the tires on him potentially when they moved off of Paul Chryst. You know, I wasn't in those negotiation rooms, but I'm pretty sure that Luke Fickell and his camp went to Wisconsin and they wanted certain assurances as well in terms of support staff, in terms of, you know, spending more money on strength and conditioning or getting more resources, whatever it took to get Wisconsin back to the point where they're trying to get to. I'm sure Luke Fickell understands what it takes because he has an Ohio State background and what he needed in order to get them there. And with the new Big Ten money, I don't think Wisconsin, you know, shied away from that either. So I'm sure that they're, you know, going to be willing to do what it takes to add more resources and get them to, you know, an elite point as well. So that's another thing for Iowa as well. We talk about that other component of building in an elite program, that support staff, the strength and conditioning, the facility upgrades, whatever it may be. But the Big Ten is printing money right now. So kind of like the big spenders and the aggressive programs, I think at least are going to be the ones that are going to be at the top kind of in this new era.
Yeah. And obviously Iowa spent its money on Kirk Ferentz a year ago, you know, $7 million a year through 2029. So he's pretty much on par with a little bit below now Matt Rhule and Luke Fickell, but Iowa's kind of made its bed too in choosing its coach and that. So that you're going to have to make these changes under the Ferentz construct unless he's just going to walk away. So that's kind of where Iowa is at in the competitive situation. And you made a great, I know we got to get going because we like to keep these to 30 minutes. We're already over, but you made a great point, Matt Rhule, talking about blocking and tackling, physical brand of style that he plays. And then Luke Fickell, same thing. He's bringing his strength and conditioning right-hand man coach. I mean, they had 9 draft picks last year from Cincinnati in the NFL. So these are programs that are building just like Iowa wants to build. So it's not like you can really distinguish. So, and Luke Fickell talked about spending an NIL too. So, yeah, it's kudos to Nebraska and Wisconsin. I think good hires, and Iowa now needs to respond. So that's it.
Right. Right. I mean, that's all that college, I mean, that's really all that college athletics is at the end of the day, right? It's fun. And it's, you know, staying on par or trying to best your rivals. I mean, that's all that,
yeah, right.
All these programs are trying to do. So
like Auburn.
Right. Exactly. Like yeah. Auburn. And, you know, on a Big Ten level, you look at Michigan and Ohio State right now in kind of the power dynamic there. So Nebraska, Wisconsin made their moves. I think Iowa, again, is in a very – they're in a good position. I mean, in spite of all that we've talked about the offense and how bad it is and the problems and whatever, they are still right there contending and really should have won back-to-back Big Ten West titles. So it's not all doom and gloom. Mm-hmm. It is you know, just doing the necessary things to remain viable and maybe even take a step forward. And yeah, I think that's really all the fans are asking for. So you know, I know we spent the last 10 minutes kind of big upping a few of their rivals, but give Iowa some time. I'm of the opinion that they are going to make changes. I just don't see any way that they don't. So, you know, let's just kind of wait and see what they do, and we'll just kind of react from there.
All right, thanks, Kennington Smith. Kennington will be at Carver tonight for Iowa Georgia Tech Hoops. We'll talk more about that on Wednesday's radio show. More hoops then, more bowl talk then, more Hawkeye football then. Thanks for listening to this YouTube podcast, and catch us on Wednesday nights. And then, of course, bowl selection on Sunday. Thanks for following us along, and talk to you soon.